You can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/mini. Now, in September of last year, we featured a man by the name of Ed Leamy on the show. He was quite unforgettable because if you close your eyes now, he might just sound like the walrus of love, Barry White.
I never take anything for granted. Only a fool takes things for granted. Just because it's here today, it can be gone tomorrow. And that's one thing that you never, in your life, ever have to worry about me. If I'll ever change towards you. Because, baby, I love you. Girl, I love you. Just the way you are.
There, he's only 25. He's the Irish Barry White, I suppose. Ed Leamy, you're welcome back to the programme.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you, and great to see you.
Yes.
And I know you don't want them to come in, but Ed Leamy told us last time he was on the show, and Brenda was quizzing him there a few moments ago, he has an identical twin.
Yes.
Who is somewhere around the building.
Yeah.
And we want him in to see if he looks and sounds as deep as you for a 25-year-old. Anyway, it's good to have you. We'll find the twin. What's the twin's name, by the way?
Thomas.
Thomas.
Yes.
Or is it Thomas?
Thomas, either or. Thomas, he responds to both. He's very good like that.
It's a silent TH, I think, when it comes to the name Thomas in Thailand and Thames. But anyway, it's good to see you. You've been in South Africa. Or Africa, where?
That's right. I was over in South Africa since June. South Africa,
Mozambique. Hang on a second till I lie down on the floor. Go on.
Don't mind, it was a very sexy voice.
Thank you very much. And yeah, I was over there and just back there a few weeks ago.
Yeah, but you sent an email and you contacted the programme because you want to talk about it.
Well, I thought it was just the most amazing place. I mean, it was so diverse culturally and otherwise. I know you were over there yourself.
I was, myself and Richard, a couple of years ago, yeah.
Whereabouts were you?
South Africa, Cape Town, and we did the whole, right down the very southern tip of Africa. Went all the way down there and came all the way back up, and we did everything you do and saw everything you see.
Down around that area, and it's very European down there, isn't it? Like, and it's supposed to be, it's, I suppose, one of the safest areas of South Africa. Myself and my friend Declan, we were there for a while, and then we travelled up north. We kind of stuck to the coast, and we went along the way, the garden route towards Port Elizabeth, and that area, it's very green. It's almost, it's supposed to be less sensational for people from Ireland or Wales or stuff like that, because it's very like here. But it's world renowned. As you climb north, it becomes kind of more Africa, real Africa, the Transkei region and the wild coast. And it's very much so, I suppose, that stereotypical image you have of Africa, where it's the golden savannah-esque horizon and the lovely sunsets and all that stuff. So that was, you know, gradually as you climb north on up to Durban and then Johannesburg, and then we moved on the way to Mozambique and Lesotho and whatnot.
Now, I'm told you're working, or were working, as a digital nomad.
Oh, yeah.
What's a digital nomad when it's at home? Or not, as the case may be,
being nomadic. It's an interesting, I didn't really know I was working as one until I met a few Americans over there in Port Elizabeth, and they all had laptops with them, and every night in the hostel they used to go in and they used to sit down there for maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours, and they used to do work for people at home. So I was doing this, I do a few websites here and there for people, and having my own server and stuff. So I was doing that kind of work for people back home, and I was realising, yeah, the world, it's very, everywhere is very approachable all of a sudden, because you have your laptop with you. As soon as you have an internet connection, you can contact anywhere, obviously, and you can work anywhere in the world. So all of a sudden, places like third world countries that, you know, usedn't have strong internet connections or whatnot because of satellite internet and that kind of thing, like Niall Quinn brought out QSAT there, but I think a year ago, that's going strong, I know. And because of things like that, you can pretty much tour the world with a laptop and
earn a living.
Yeah.
And so that's what you were doing?
Sort of, yes.
Yeah, but why the kind of urge to come in here and tell us about it? What's so special about Africa? That what kind of image are you trying to get out of our heads? Well, what stereotypical image do we have about Africa?
It's a good question. I often feel people thought I was mad going over there to South Africa, because you hear of people travelling, and of course with emigration, generation emigration at the moment, everybody's going to New Zealand, Australia, Canada, England, US, you name it. But you never hear of anybody kind of going down to South Africa. And in fact, in all the months I was there, apart from the guy who's with me travelling, I met maybe 2-3 other Irish people. So, like, Yeah, the craziness of the unknown I almost kind of fell in love with out there. And I'd love more people to go and experience that kind of craziness and that culture shock that exists out there. And it's anybody can do.
Yeah, crazy. Apparently you were held at Knife Point. Was that in Johannesburg?
That's right. It was actually not. It was actually Cape Town.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, recent before I came home. Yeah, a guy came up behind me. And I know you had a guy who was held at gunpoint earlier in the programme. I was listening.
God, it's getting very competitive in here today.
Yeah, let's see if I can better him. But came up behind me. I didn't see him coming. And I was robbed once or twice before that. I always carried a fake wallet and a fake phone. So I was fairly used to it. So when he came up behind me and had the knife, I said, "Oh, hello, are you robbing me? How are you? Good to see you."
You didn't say that to him.
I actually did, because I was so sick of being robbed at that stage. But yeah, I gave him, I think, 30 rand or something, and the exchange rate is 11 to 1, so it wasn't much, really.
Wasn't much, but he was happy enough and off he went. And yeah. You had to bribe the police as well somewhere.
Oh, with the police, that's right, in Mozambique.
Well, you're making it sound very attractive, I have to say.
Oh, well, the scenery is beautiful. I'd recommend it to anybody. But in Mozambique, we were travelling on a road, the only road in Mozambique, one road across the country. And we were stopped numerous times by police. And I think in the end, we spent more money on bribing police officers than we did on accommodation, which was kind of telling in itself. But they used to, when they see us, we had a car, and when they see a South African registered car, they basically stop you and they try to squeeze you, see whatever they can get out of you, you know. So this guy stopped me and I was driving and he said, "Hello, your brake light, it is not working." I was like, "Oh, well, it is." And I put my foot on the brake and it was turning red. And he said, no, I know what I saw and it was not working. And this, that and the other. So I was like, "Oh, right, how much?" And he was like, "Oh," I was like, "How much?" 4,000 Medica. So I was like, "Here's 200, good luck, bye." And you just do that. And, you're just expecting it over there. That same place is paradise, you know, not to paint such a bad picture. It's like, tropical palm trees, beaches, 21 degree water in Tofu. I think it's a hidden gem, and it's such a poor country. I suppose they don't really advertise themselves to the world. So that's a lovely thing to be able to come in here today and say, go to Mozambique if you can. Smile at the police officers, but go experience the lovely,
give them
lovely
a few bulbs they needed. You worked in the vineyards, I'm told.
Yeah, well, I was looking after a Twitter account for African Story Tours, which basically bring people all around, down around Stellenbosch and Cape Town and that area. Were you down on any of those wine
tours?
Yeah.
I had no interest in that, I have to tell you. I found it as dull. And all you kept hearing people talking about, you do the wine tour, you stop at this vineyard, you stop at that vineyard, you get a glass of wine here, you get a glass of wine there. I mean, if you wanted to, even if you didn't want to, if you took a glass of wine at every vineyard you stopped at, you'd be absolutely sloshed halfway around your journey. No, I just was bored. Senseless after the first one.
That's
kind
we're
not
going
to another
thing.
Two.
That's
I know,
kind of the done
but
thing,
I do think
so.
People do things in holidays because it's mapped out. Instead of saying, "Let me see one vineyard and then take me back to the hotel or put me back in the beach," or whatever you want to do, or hang around the city.
I thought you were going to say, "Put me back in my suitcase."
I also found that I felt that there was still remnants of the apartheid regime in place there. I felt that some of the white people who we were dealing with were very dismissive of black people. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like it at all for that reason. Mm-hmm. The country itself was amazing. As you said, the scenery was fantastic. Now, as I said, I was only in South Africa around the Cape Town area and the people were very pleasant. But I did see one or two things I didn't like.
That's absolutely true, unfortunately. There's a huge kind of undercurrent of racism there. And people maybe in a bar or when you're talking, mixing with Afrikaners or white English or whatnot, they seem to have just a tint of racism in them that they can't get out of. And I don't know whether it's a generational thing. Hopefully it's getting better and better. But certainly young people, old people, a lot of people we met, they were all sort of borderline racist. And it was not nice to see. But of course, everywhere has good and bad. And there's a lot of white people I met that were so open towards black people, working for them. Blacks working for whites, whites working for blacks. And of course, traditionally, the whites controlled the politics and the economy and everything, but I think we're seeing a gradual swing in that. So that's a nice thing, because apartheid only ended, Derry, in 1994. So that's so recent in terms of like world history. And when you hear stories of like racism and like practical slavery, sometimes you think of nearly hundreds of years ago.
Old habits die hard was my experience of the place. Tell me, did you go into a township?
Yeah, we went, I went to Khayelitsha outside Cape Town.
That's the big one.
Yeah, it's huge. Like, I think a couple of million of a population. I mean, seriously, you could get lost in there. But yeah, myself and Declan went into a community centre that is based there, set up by a Swedish woman. And of course, we were told not to go walking out and about, but we went walking out and about for about an hour and a half. And yeah, I mean, it's just a different world. And that's another thing on diversity, I suppose. When you think of the wealth that's in Cape Town, like, I mean, Michael Schumacher has a house there, and all Camps Bay, Howth Bay, all these places with huge houses owned by what they call summer chasers, people who live in Europe for the summer, then go to South Africa for the Southern Hemisphere summer. So you see that huge wealth. And then a stone's throw away, you have this, like, shanty town, township, that's the galvanized houses cost 600 rand, so that's like roughly 60 euro. And just outside the road, like on the way to the airport, you pass the each side of the road.
And the people who live there are coming to the gardens of the rich and famous.
That's right, and they all kind of commute into the city centre and whatnot. And I mean, wages over there, people can live on a dollar a day, say $1.25, so a euro a day or whatnot. Yeah, it's mad.
Did you experience any kind of racism towards you when you were there?
Yeah, well, let me see now. I suppose being Irish, I almost feel like it's a golden ticket.
Yeah,
in a way.
I'm Irish, sure, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like every hostel we went to, we were certainly, when we put our names down in the book as being Ireland, it nearly brought a smile to everybody's face, which was lovely to see. We're certainly very welcome in South Africa, so more people should go there. Yeah, it was very, very receptive towards Irish people. And there's a lot of English people go there, an awful lot of Germans. So here's hoping more Irish in the future.
Now, talk to me about your voice.
Oh, well, I'm sure, aren't I talking?
The last time you were on, I was saying that you should really become a voiceover artist doing ads. Any movement on that?
Yeah, well, actually, soon enough, I suppose, after last time I was in here, I was contacted by a nice group called Volcanic Talent Agency. So I'll be doing a bit of work with them now.
Very good.
Soon enough, doing a show reel and whatnot. So hopefully it'll lead to something. Who knows?
Well, what are you going to do? I mean, you were president of the ECU, so...
Well, to be honest, I'm just back
there. You should have loads of offers of jobs.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Well connected.
No, I'm going to take it handy. Maybe go to France for a week or two before Christmas, and then when I come back in the new year, get real, settle down, knuckle down.
25, get real, settle down, knuckle down.
So I've just opened my eyes again. I've just been listening to your voice. That's all.
Anyway, nice to see you again, and the best of luck.
Thank you very much.
I should never know. Maybe we'll get you to do one or two things over the Christmas.